sex trafficking of children is happening everywhere these days, including right here in Kansas City. The old hometown ranks fourth among U.S. cities for minors sex trafficking. 2 years ago, Kansas City ranked second in the nation for men looking for prostitutes. And get this, the U.S. Attorney's Office here has prosecuted more trafficking cases than any other district in the country. Now a conversation about just how big an issue this is and what has to happen to stop it. With us, Tim Matsui is a journalist and filmmaker who produced the documentary The Long Night that examined the sex trafficking of children in Seattle. He'll be speaking at the library here in town this week. Tim, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thank you for having me.
Heath Yonke is also with us. He's the supervisory special agent of the FBI's Public Corruption Civil Rights Squad in Kansas City with experience overseeing human trafficking. And Heath, nice to have you too. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, Tim, I want to dive right into this because at one point in your film, you talked to a man named Andy Connor, a veteran King County Sheriff's deputy out in the Seattle area, who tells you he's arresting the same girls over and over again for prostitution, and he wanted to know why. He said something very interesting to you, and this is from your film here, and this is, again, he's a veteran cop. He said the thinking among most people in law enforcement is that these girls, and many of them are just that, girls, they do this of their own free will, and they want to be out in the streets doing this stuff. And then Andy Connor came to a very different realization about all of this. What did he figure out?
I like to look at it as law enforcement going victim-centric, you know, quote-unquote, in that he's able to understand that some of the people that he's arresting for sex work are not there of their own free will. And in the film, he talks about how there are actually a couple that he was arresting repeatedly, and they turned to him and said, well, can you help me get out? Because they didn't have services available. It was just this cycle of arrest, back out on the street, arrest, back out on the street.
He was sort of scratching his head for a moment, like, how do we help these people? I've never been asked a question like that before.
Yeah, I mean, he had the old school cop mentality of, you know, they're doing it of their own free will, and we're just going to arrest them, they're going to get out, and it's going to be a big pain. But it shifted for him when those young girls asked him that question. And then these were kids.
Well, what really got to me was if the Andy Connors of the world are confused about what these girls' motivation is, what's the hope for the rest of us?
Well, I think that this is something we look at, like domestic violence 30 years ago was something that happened in the home, and we didn't really talk about it because that was a relationship thing. It wasn't something that cops got involved in.
Yeah.
But if we look at, you know, minor sex trafficking today, there's a growing awareness and a growing movement behind it. So I think the best thing that we as society can do is understand what this is and be a little more open to our viewpoints and possibly changing them, just like Andy did when he shifted from they're all criminals to, wait a second, some of these people are being victimized.
Well, Heath Yonke with the FBI here in Kansas City, do we have any sense of how big a problem we have here with the sex trafficking of children? Are you able to track this stuff in any way?
We are not. What I can tell you is, unfortunately, we're not immune from this here in the heartland and here in the Kansas City. We've had plenty of these types of cases, but when it comes to stats on it, it's nothing we track or I give a whole lot of weight to. You know, human trafficking is a hidden crime where if the traffickers do their jobs, they try to keep us from law enforcement from finding out about it. And so when people throw out statistics, I find those hard to always rely upon because we truly don't know the number of victims that are out there within our community.
Well, as I said in the opening, you know, the problem exists in all 50 states. I don't want this to come across as unfeeling, and I don't mean it to, but is this whole issue being driven by demand and supply?
The whole issue is human trafficking is not just related to commercial sex. We have to look at the overall bigger picture here. And we also have forced labor cases, and we also have domestic servant cases where these traffickers are preying upon the most vulnerable populations that we have in our society. And the people that need help are the ones that they're preying upon. And it can go to both the commercial sex or those that are forced into labor, whether it's at restaurants, whether it's at hotels and resorts, those types of industries. And wherever the money can be made, that's where these traffickers are putting these victims.
They're able to prey upon the most vulnerable members of our society. How?
So they are out there recruiting, you know, they're looking for minors. They are looking for substance abuse people. They are looking for runaways. They are looking for the mentally challenged or those with low educational levels. They are also looking for people that already have experience with the legal system and may fear law enforcement. So any of those vulnerabilities that the victims have, they can use that against them to force them into that human trafficking situation.
Are there trends here, Heath? Are these victims typically black or white or Hispanic? Is there any trend emerging?
There is no trend, and that's actually one of the misperceptions we see a lot with human trafficking is a lot of times people think, well, they have to be foreigners that are brought into our country, and that's not true. For the FBI standpoint, a lot of our victims are our own U.S. citizens. And there are no trends. Whoever they can prey upon and make money on, that's who they're going to use, whether it's male, female, black, white, foreign or domestic, as long as they can prey upon them and they're going to make them a dollar at the end of the day, they'll go with whatever person they can get their hands on.
You know, Tim, my sense of things is that a lot of people out there believe that when it comes to this whole topic of human trafficking, that people have this image in their heads of men in a van driving down a street and jumping out and grabbing somebody and throwing them in the van and taking off. We're talking about something that's different than that here, though, aren't we?
Well, that happens too.
Okay.
But my experience with this film is looking more at the pimping side from sort of the boyfriend romance end of things, where Natalie, one of the subjects in the film, ends up being romanced by this guy, and you know she falls in love with him even as he's turning her out for tricks and beating her. It's a complex domestic violence relationship at that point in which he's exploiting her for commercial sex, and she's 15 at the time.
Let's talk about Natalie again. She's the first girl you spotlight in this film, and again, her road to prostitution was not a road she ever envisioned for herself. She had, you know, what struck me as a very solid family, solid parents, and then suddenly she's on the streets. Tell us about her and how she got where she did, Tim.
She's an independent person. She wanted to go out and experience the world. She thought she could do that. She was a straight-A student, violin, soccer, family that loved her, intact household. But she left and decided to go out and experience the world. Made it to Seattle, and within 36 hours was, you know, a bottom girl had approached her, and that bottom girl is somebody who runs the stable for the pimp. And so basically got befriended by this woman, and I think within 48 hours was being raped, and with that trauma was then forced to prostitute. She escaped about 10 days later, but that set her up for the second round.
Well, just be slow down here. A lot of parents hearing you describe this are going to be pausing here and wondering. So stable family, you know, two parents in the home. She's loved. She's doing her homework. She's playing the violin. So she takes this first step. Why?
You know, there's a lot of expectation to perform, to do well. And I think she got a C, and she was a little upset about that. Her older siblings had left. All the focus was on her. I think that it happens. Like, kids want to go out and experience the world or do something on their own or assert their independence. And unfortunately, that can put them in a place of vulnerability. And there are people out there willing to prey on that. There's been questions like, well, what did her dad do? It's like, he didn't do anything. You know, it's just she chose to walk out of that house one day and go try and be in the world, and there happen to be predators out there.
And the scary thing is, and one of your points of this film is, this could be anybody's daughter.
Literally, yeah, it could be anybody's daughter. I've done a lot of training stuff with sexual assault nurse examiners. They're the forensic nurses that look you over after a rape. And one of them pulled me aside and said, "Wow, you know, my daughter went with her friend down to Westlake Mall in Seattle, and they were approached by pimps. You know, I know this because I know this field. Like, I know what this is about." And when they came back and they talked about it, I knew exactly what had happened there. And, you know, this is somebody from a, upper middle class family.
You know, in the case of Natalie, again, people listening might be wondering about this, Tim. Why didn't she just walk away? What's so difficult about getting up, walking out the door?
Shame. You know, I mean, if you can't go home because you are no longer that person that your parents, you think your parents want you to be, you know, you've been raped, you've been repeatedly selling yourself to people. I mean, it's a self-esteem thing at that point. Plus, if you've fallen in love with somebody, the thing about pimps is that they will strip away everything in your life so that you, you know, that pimp is the only thing that you can trust and rely on. And if, you know, it's hard to walk away from that. I mean, it's, let's go back to domestic violence.
That's a hard concept for people to grasp, I think. You see it in your film, but it's a hard concept for people intellectually to hang on to here.
Well, again, I'm just going to go back to the domestic violence thing or any twisted relationship that I'm sure a lot of the listeners have been in, like bad relationships at some point, and they're like, why don't I just leave? Well, you don't, because you're in the relationship. You love the person, even though that person is hurting you. And you may not realize that it's actually pain that they're causing. So, yeah, I mean, it's really complex. And for a kid to be dealing with that when they're being manipulated by somebody twice their age, that's kind of hard.
I should point out that Tim Matsui will be screening his film, The Long Night, tonight at the Plaza Library by the Country Club Plaza at 6:30. A discussion with local survivors and law enforcement will follow that event. You can RSVP online at kclibrary.org. Heath, with the FBI, what we're talking about here is a different definition of sex trafficking than a lot of people think. Words that often pop up here are grooming and manipulation. What does that mean exactly?
That's part of the process that these pimps use to recruit the females, get them going in the prostitution game, as they call it.
What does grooming mean? What is that process?
That is the process that they set them up to get them into the prostitution game. Maybe starting with having sex with them as the pimp, and then, as Tim was saying, you know, as crazy as it seems, these victims develop love for their pimps, and they think that these pimps have their best interests and they're the only ones that care for them. And they start that whole process of grooming them so then they can get them going in the prostitution game and start getting them out on the streets selling themselves.
You know, what strikes me as especially scary about all this is, how do you stop it? I mean, how can you prevent a young girl raised in a seemingly good home with seemingly good parents from one day taking off and ruining her life?
That's a great question, and I wish I had an
answer
for it, because
yeah.
we could stop human trafficking if we could answer that question and not have to be investigating these crimes.
Tim Matsui, after spending so much time with this film, do you have an answer to it?
Yeah, although I would like to say just a comment on how you phrase that, and this is an example right here. She walks out and she ruins her life. That's a victim-blaming statement. And I think that's something that we need to realize as a society, that, you know, we can't set people up for this kind of failure. They're not going to come out of the life if they're not able to be received by a community. I did a lot of work around sexual violence a decade ago, and there's a lot of victim blaming behavior that was happening there. And I think that if you look at the trafficking of minors for sex, it's domestic violence, it's sexual assault. You know, there's other components to it. It's kind of a nexus of all these things.
Mm-hmm.
So for us as a society to solve that, I think we need to look at what are the root causes that create vulnerability, and also look at the demand side of the equation. It's like, who are the people who are buying it? Why are they buying it? You know, is it possible for them to do so? I mean, people will buy sex. Is it possible for them to do that in a way that is not going to harm children?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that a question we even want to address as a society? And then ultimately, I think, you know, let's go to some basics like after school programs, mental health, drug dependency. If we look at the root causes, I think we can then decrease the vulnerability that then leads to exploitation.
You know, Heath, the other thing I'm wondering about, and this is a slightly different question, where do you look to stop it? I mean, do you concentrate on catching the traffickers, you know, as Tim was just suggesting, or educating the public about the dangers, or what?
You know, one of the biggest components that we do is educating the public. We try to be out doing presentations and talking to community groups or on the radio for like today as much as possible. The more we can educate the public to be out looking for the red flags, to call us so that we can then investigate, the better off we are.
And the red flags are what? Just so we're all tracking with you here.
red flags, such as, you know, the big thing we look at a lot in these cases are freedom of movement, signs that someone is not free to move. If they are foreigners, do they have their paperwork with them? Do they have their passports or visas? Are they being paid? You know, the old types of force situations, are they guarded? Is there barbed wire around the house that they're living in? Just, we've got a number of red flags we look at that people that may not think of human trafficking come to one of our presentations and then start seeing it, and then they call in. So the more we teach the public, the more documentaries there are that get the word out, the more cases that get brought into us to investigate.
You know, Heath, is there an educational component of what Tim has done here with The Long Night? Is there a use for this film that goes beyond the library tonight?
Absolutely. Anytime there's a documentary that raises awareness of human trafficking and of sex trafficking of minors or adults, the more that that's out there in the public, the more people that view it, the more people that start talking about this subject, the more victims we're going to be able to identify and rescue.
We're talking about the sex trafficking of kids. If you want to join our conversation this morning, 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Tim.
Yeah, I just want to say that in King County, it's taken over a year now, but they're going to use the film to build awareness amongst its 13,000 plus employees. There's also an engagement.
The county employees there.
County employees. Like. Mm-hmm. The county has developed a policy around the purchase of sex, which is, I think, an important political and social step forward, in that they're actually addressing it as a government body and leading it, amongst other businesses. And there's this organization called bestalliance.org, which is working with businesses around the country to develop policies around the purchase of sex. But what we're also doing is an engagement program that leverages a mobile app that captures the audience's emotional reactions in real time. And we feed that back to them. And we're showing them short chapters derived from the original content that is the film. And that is going to be used with policymakers and experts. And what it does is it exposes the differences in opinions and allows us to have facilitated discussion where we co-create solutions around it. So it leads to policy change.
You know, policy change, you know, Senator Clemmer Caskill of Missouri was just talking about this issue a couple of weeks ago on Capitol Hill, talking about a 15-year-old girl who was rescued from sex traffickers in the St. Louis area. So clearly this issue is getting some traction even in the nation's capital.
Yeah, I think there's a really broad spectrum of opinion and way of addressing it and even levels of understanding. And I think if we can build awareness across the board and develop a common vocabulary and have the dialogue around it, then I think that we can actually lead to, you know, take ourselves as a society towards solutions around the issue.
Let's go to some phone calls here. Heather from Gardner. Heather, welcome to Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi, I was just directing this question towards the FBI agent.
Yes.
So we know around the city that there's these Asian massage parlors have popped up all over. And there was just a major bust. I want to say it was last year here in Gardner where they shut one down. And I've seen several in Leawood and Overland Park, and there's one in Olathe. And you can tell that maybe they're not so legit. Hold on. Maybe they're not so legit because they've got the windows covered up. And I was wondering what all is being done about that, because every time they shut one down, another one just pops up in another part of the city. And I'll take my response off air. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Heather. I imagine that's a problem for you guys.
Well, when it comes to Asian massage parlors, again, we have to show that the women inside are being forced to perform sexual acts against their will. So mm-hmm. We're not saying all Asian massage parlors have human trafficking victims in there. But if the public has some facts, some allegations that what is going on, that such as they never leave the massage parlor, there's some types of red flags that they just don't come and go and may be held against their will, that's when we need to be called so we can investigate those.
Tim Matsui, how did you get interested in making a documentary about King's County to begin with?
King County. It's a really... I got a photography grant from the Alexia Foundation, which is out of Syracuse. And in the building of the relationships for the stories, I ended up doing a lot more video and realizing how deep the relationships went. We were able to work together to make a documentary film out of it. Originally, it was going to be some multimedia and some still images. My interest in the issue, though, comes from doing all that work around trauma and victimization over a decade ago, creating a nonprofit related to that, and then going to Southeast Asia, naively to Thailand, looking at sex trafficking, where it's pretty much a standardized industry. It's very Disneylandish. But going to Cambodia, I saw it was much more raw. And I learned a lot more about how labor is a really important form of human trafficking as well. And that showed me a lot more about root causes. So when I came back in 2009, I had this international experience. I had all these relationships from the trauma and victimization community. And I saw the city of Seattle was addressing the issue of domestic minor sex trafficking. So I said, well, maybe I can do something here. Hmm. It took 4 years of additional grant writing and research before I finally won that first photography grant in 2012.
Wow. And then how many years did you spend filming?
I would say about a year of filming and relationship work. Editing was kind of happening concurrently. The studio that did that was Media Storm out of New York.
Yeah.
And then I spent the last year and a half or so working on the impact campaign around that, which is this grassroots model, which is why I'm here today.
Yeah. Well, what struck me about this film, obviously, and this is an obvious conclusion, is just how incredibly sad all of this is. You know, as an FBI agent who's worked in this field, you know, Heath, how do you deal with it?
And that's a good point. I mean, this takes a toll even on an FBI agent or any law enforcement.
And the officers in Tim's film.
Yeah. Absolutely. When you are around this stuff all day and you can see how these victims are brutalized and how they're treated and you are constantly dealing with that on a daily basis, it takes a toll on the investigator itself over a period of years.
How do you deal with it?
That's a good you put out hope that, one, we're going to hold those traffickers accountable and put them in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And then the victim is also going to become whole and over a period of years be rehabilitated and back into society. And that we've the feeling of rescuing that victim, I think, is what keeps us going.
How did you deal with it, Tim, spending as much time as you did filming all this?
I go climb in the mountains. I have a good social circle, and just acceptance. You know, this is life, and it's not going to be rosy for everybody. But within that, people still find hope, and you know, they have desires that they want to meet. You know, Lisa, who's the other young woman in the film, she's still caught in the life. And you know, I, after doing the reporting, try to do something to help her get out, but she turned it down because she's not ready, and I have to accept that, you know?
You know, speaking of Lisa, I just wanted to end with this, and speaking of sad, you shot a scene with her inside a McDonald's bathroom. I think it was a McDonald's bathroom. Do I have that right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's getting high as you shoot this scene. Walk us through those moments and what Lisa tells you about herself and what she's done to her body, because it was pretty hard to watch.
Yeah, so I was lucky that Kerry Wagner, who's another cinematographer, was there with me, because not only is intravenous drug use kind of illegal in King County, but me being in a women's bathroom in McDonald's would probably be bad. So
yeah.
Kerry was able to film that. And Lisa talks about the scars of her heroin use. She's also was a cutter, which, you know, is some way of trying to maintain a grip on reality, self-punishment, whatnot. But, you know, Lisa's life at that point was about a 3-hour cycle of, you know, getting high, going out, turning a trick, getting money, going to the dealer, getting high.
Yeah.
And that's something she had developed since she was turned out by a pimp at the age of 13, rather brutally, actually.
Wow. Well, Heath, let's end on a more upbeat note here. The U.S. Attorney's Office here has something called the Human Trafficking Rescue Project that combats human trafficking. What is it and how does it work?
So we've had this going since 2005, and it's really just a concentrated and concerted effort to address human trafficking. And it brings federal law enforcement, local law enforcement, and also non-governmental organizations such as shelters that can provide the resources to our victims when they need it, whether it's medical, clothing, food, all those things. So it's bringing all those together with the prosecutive stage of the U.S. Attorney's Office so that we can go out and address this this all together as one unit.
Heath Yonke is a supervisory special agent of the FBI's public corruption squad here in Kansas City. And Tim Matsui's film, The Long Night, will screen tonight at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library at 6:30. More information, kclibrary.org. Thank you both for a very compelling conversation. Good luck with your good work.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.